the 10 offenses. Then we had gotten to the second. Yeah, second offense. Did we deal with the third offense? But the spiritual master? Yeah, I think we did. So the fourth offense, to blaspheme Vedic literatures, or those literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. So then, understanding of Shabda means that one learns something through hearing. That is the most authoritative. By using the senses or by inference, this is not considered as important. Means it should be in line, should see whatever we see, that should be in line with what we have heard. But the point is, if there's a difference between what we hear and what we see, then what we see needs to be adjusted. Right? Means, in other words, what we are doing, if there's a difference between what is heard, that must be adjusted. So what is heard is always the authority. So the Vedic literatures, by studying them, then we actually have the knowledge by which we can properly serve Krishna. Yeah. That knowledge is very important. Krishna is saying performance of our duties in knowledge. So this knowledge is gained from the scriptures, is gained from the spiritual master. Therefore, if we don't deal properly with the spiritual master or with Vedic literatures, then our life is not going to develop very properly. So here, then it also mentions those literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. Because the Vedic literatures themselves, then they are giving the absolute truth, but in a very broad way. So it's depending upon what your philosophy is, you can very easily accept the Vedas. You're a theist, you're an atheist, you know, you believe that everything comes from atoms, or you just think that everything's eternal, but it just transforms, whatever you think, then you can get that from the Vedas and be happy. They're when you open the cabin, just in the door. Then, so to make this more clear, other literatures have been written that are supporting or giving the conclusions of what the Vedas are telling. Like the Vedas is giving a philosophy, but then the Puranas give that philosophy in a practical way of example, so we can see it. So this way we get the Puranas. Then the Dharma Shastras then give more detail based on the Vedic literatures on the rituals and social details and all this. And then we get, thank you. Also, just say Korma takes Mataji into the kitchen. You can see the fires and, you know, Kishidanga and that kind of stuff. And the pots, show the copper pots. So then, in this way, it becomes more and more clear for us in different areas. Like someone who studies the Veda properly, under a proper teacher, has the time and has the intelligence, every aspect of knowledge can be gained. There's nothing that can be gained from there. But you have to be intelligent enough to see all that knowledge in there. Just like someone who is a master in a particular area, they know everything all together. But now when you teach it to somebody, if they're very intelligent just by association and a few points you point out, this is this and that's that, it's understand. But otherwise, the normal thing is you have to take it in one aspect by another aspect. You have to tell that to somebody. You have to bring it out. They understand that aspect, then the other aspect. Then you just have to get them to put it all together. But so because of this, then it was seen that the people were not that qualified. They couldn't understand the Veda. Therefore, then the Vyasadeva broke it up into various aspects and wrote all these different literatures to support the Veda. Because then all these things are there. The histories are there. Everything is there. There's nothing that's not always there. Like we see that the, you know, I think it was Vasudev, when he's dealing with Devaki and Kamsa. That passed out. Kamsa wants to kill Devaki. Then Vasudev is quoting Bhagavad Gita. Right? But then we say Krishna didn't speak to Gita until, you know, another 130 years later or something. Because the Gita was always there. From when Krishna spoke it to the sun god, that scripture is there. Though it's handed down by hearing. So the Puranas are there. They're by hearing. Veda is only hearing. It's always learned by hearing. And that. So all different aspects are there to support what the Veda is giving. And then with our own acharyas, then they take very specific aspects as given by Lord Chaitanya. And then they are writing on that. And then from there, the clear conclusions come out. Right? By studying the Veda, you may miss the conclusions. They study these other literatures, they bring a little closer. And by studying the Bhagavatam, the Gita, and the literatures of the Goswamis, then it brings us very near. It means the conclusions are very obvious. Now it's just our qualification. So therefore, we cannot, the devotees that we are receiving mercy from, if we blaspheme them, then what is our chance? Then how you say? If we blaspheme the spiritual master from amongst those devotees who's guiding us, the scriptures, then, so that means we see Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. The fourth offense is Shastras. Third offense is Guru. First offense is Sadhus. So we see Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. These are mentioned there. And the holy name is what is uplifting us. If we just see him as just some name like any other, then that's not very good.
Hey, Kormaji, did you see Sohota Maharaj?
Yes, we have.
You went inside, yeah.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah, you can see right up to the top.
Very inspired,
yeah. Yeah. Well, we're looking at the spoke of the bicycle, and then they figured it out from there.
Oh, they figured it out?
No, not the locals, not the boys.
It's the same thing as the basic doping technique at the yurt.
They?
Yurt. Oh. Yeah, on the steps, they have all their bottom ones first. They go a 45 degree angle or a 30 degree angle, and then they bring another set around going just the opposite. So it looks like a fence that expands out, and they have a conical roof like that. And they also have a spiral. Please tell the Bengalis that are working here that don't speak English that I think they're doing a beautiful job.
Oh.
And I'm very impressed.
Okay.
For the fifth offense, consider the glories of the holy name as exaggerations. So generally, as Westerners, then there's so much of a difficulty with the holy name that's being spoken. Those who are accustomed to studying the Vedic literatures from the Karmakanda, the Jnanakanda point of view, they sometimes have a difficulty. And even nowadays, as devotees are becoming more adjusted with it, then this problem comes up. They think it's an exaggeration. It means those who are followers, the Vedavadaratas, they will think that it is they consciously think it's an exaggeration. The devotees themselves may think, unconsciously it's an exaggeration. So this is for the conscious, for those who know the Vedas, then you're seeing that it's talking about the great, big, huge, elaborate yajnas to get to the heavenly planets. If you want to do an ashwamedha yajna, it's not a small thing. It's not that you just decide today I'm going to do it and call up some brahmins and tomorrow it's happening. Whole thing must be planned, proper times, build the kundas, everything. It may take you 6 months, a year, just to prepare everything according to the shastras. Then you have to send out the horse. And it has to go around. And by going around, then it has to be seen that... Oh, excuse me, that's Rajasuya. Rajasuya, then you send the horse out, and just wanders freely. And if it comes into somebody's kingdom, they have two choices. Capture the horse and then fight with the king who's sending the horse's army, or to pay tax towards the performance of the yajna. Right? So generally it was very rare that anyone would catch. But this had to be done. The emperor has to do this, because then that proves that he is the emperor. Otherwise it's not just someone's not following. I mean, someone who doesn't agree, they have to agree. Either they don't agree because they're more powerful, so they fight, or they accept the sovereignty of that king, and they become vassals and pay tax. So that's not a small thing, because it's going to go all over the planet. So that will take a little time for that to be done. So you're talking about years, years, and years. Then from that, then that establishes you as the king here. And then you want to go to the heavenly planets. 100 ashrameda yajnas is no easy thing either, to do the 100 horse sacrifices and all that. Very elaborate. And all. So much wealth, this, that. And you do all that, then you get to the heavenly planets. So now some of it will hear, glories of the holy name, just one chanting can destroy all the sins of the universe. Or just by chanting, one is liberated. When it comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform, just by chanting Hare Krishna, even in the clearing stage, not even in the pure stage. Then we see that some people don't agree with that. Like that, what's his name? When Chakrabarti. Then when Haridas Thakur was describing the glories of the holy name and said that just the glimmer, the Nama box, can bring one to the platform of liberation. And he didn't agree. He said, if this is not true, then your nose will fall off. He said to Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur said, no problem. So a few days later, he got leprosy and his nose fell off, the Brahmin. Because he was attached to the Brahmavadi scriptures, you know, the Brahmavadi view. And so they couldn't accept the glories that just chanting the holy name, no rules, no regulations. You can either go back to God to get liberation, or if you want to go to the heavenly planets, you can get it. So this bewilders these who follow the Vedas. They don't accept that this is true. They think it's an exaggeration, you know, like that. But it's not like that. Just like in the Shastras, it says, go to the heavenly planet, they're amara, they don't die, they always enjoy it. You know, everyone knows this, you're going to die at some time, it's so long that it's there. So just, it's kind of like an exaggeration just to, you know, make everybody happy and enthuse them. So the holy name, the glories that are told, they're also in the same kind of mood. So it's not that. So therefore, this has significance for someone who studied Vedic literature and seen the kind of vocabulary that's used to encourage the different kinds of persons to take up the path of elevation, right? Like that. So somebody like a small child, they're doing something, they're not doing very nice. Small children never do anything nice, right? But because their mood is right and all, you encourage them. No, great job, very good, very nice, you know, like that. And then they feel encouraged, and then they do. But if you tell an adult, yes, they adult does that much, you won't tell them it's very nice. You tell them they need to, you know, they need to perfect their technique a little bit. So like that, it's not an exaggeration. That's an important aspect. And then. For the devotees themselves, they also have to understand the power of the holy name. That just by chanting the holy name, one is purified, one is elevated. And no matter how much nonsense someone does, the chanting of the holy name is the only thing that can correct it. There's nothing else that can correct it. Therefore, if one really wants to benefit somebody, then one makes an arrangement that they are very nicely engaged in the Lord's service. You know, whatever they're engaged now, if there's a problem, they should be engaged more. There should be more chanting, more association, more reading. In other words, more association with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. like that, and with the chanting of the holy name. Then they'd be purified. Otherwise, we make some other system that doesn't necessarily purify anyone, because it has to be according to nature. Right? If someone who's not good at collecting money, and you say, well, he's got to go out and raise funds for something, that's not purification. That's just giving trouble to somebody. You decide they have to do so many things, you know, sometimes a manager will be purified by washing pots. Of course, by washing pots, menial service, one is purified. But real purification will do some very serious management. Krishna. Like that. So this comes when there's a lack of faith in actual strength of the holy name. Because I saw myself when I was, you know, in the 70s, you know, early, mid-70s. Someone went away from Krishna consciousness. You know, one day they disappear from the temple. And then, you know, 6 months later, kind of in a draggled way, end up on the steps of the temple again. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they go, get it back, you know. And everybody, oh, great, you're back, you know. And you just continue where you left off. Whatever service they were doing before, they just come right back to that. And it was kind of like, you know, oh yeah, Maya got it for some time, huh? You know, and no one asked details, no one got into it, no one cared. Because they know Maya is Maya, you know? And Krishna consciousness can cure Maya. So then it was just immediately one would go back in, no matter what one was doing. And one would just put one into the right place. So that has to be seen. We saw that that was followed by the devotees because that was what was followed by Prabhupada. Whatever someone would leave and they come, they would go back into that service, whatever. Because that's nature, and that's what will purify them. So the holy name, devotional service, you have to have faith that this is actually going to purify us. That's the whole story of Ajamiya, which is described, just to show that the real purification is the holy name. Because, I mean, what Ajamil did, so much nonsense, right? Leaving very good parents, devotional parents, very nicely trained wife, and just went and followed a prostitute. And then to maintain the prostitute, he's stealing, he's cheating, he's lying, you know, even becoming involved in you know, all kinds of things. And he was saved by what? By chanting the holy name. Not by going to the different hellish planets, but by the holy name. So it's a very essential point. If devotees have faith in the name, then the emphasis will be put on the name. But if we don't, if we have faith in our organizational abilities and faith in our own understandings other than this, then we'll dream of so many different ways to purify ourselves, purify others. Right? Look, we understand security. Security only comes from chanting the holy name. And we have nature. We perform prescribed duties from that. Whatever results come, we live from that. Bus finished. You know? We put in however many hours a day for our occupational activities. Outside, you know, we do our sadhana and then our occupational duties. Whatever comes as a result from that, we use it for Krishna. We use it to maintain ourselves. We use it for Krishna. It works very nicely. But now, if we think that this is not, well, devotional service, you know, what have I got? You know, I did this Sankirtan for 20 years. What do I have to show for it? So does that mean we did Sankirtan to get some material results? We want the pious results, the pious material results now from our Sankirtan? I collected $500,000 for the temple. What do I have now? So that means we don't have faith in the name. We don't have faith that what we're getting from that service, from that preaching, from the chanting the holy name, that is of greater benefit than whatever material facilities we may think we deserve. Because when we drop down into the realm of pious activities, economic development, we must remember one thing. Then we're in the realm of karma. And whatever you do according to karma, you only get that much, and that's it. By chanting the holy name, we might find ourselves in a position much greater than what we would be due in the material world. Right? Therefore, you see a devotee may be very, you know, how you say, he, with time becomes very sophisticated, good organized, good this, that, you know, very respected, very knowledgeable, so many things. And then somehow or another they have the idea that now, you know, if I'm, you know, attracted by Maya, I'll go out into Maya and I'll still be the big wheel. I'll still be the, you know, the high roller. But you find as soon as they go out, it's like you're on a carousel. As soon as you step off, you're not moving, you're not going anywhere. So wherever you left the material world, it's exactly where you go back to. So if one was a hippie before, he'd become very sophisticated, organized. As soon as he leaves, again he becomes a hippie. Because it's two different systems. The devotional system and the material system. Like that. So when one wants to step into the realm of karma, then whatever karma you do, that's what you're going to get. So the idea, I did so much this, I deserve this, doesn't necessarily mean. One is on one side is that we've done so much service and then we think that I'll just get a little material benefit. That means one doesn't understand the comparison. One doesn't understand how much benefit is coming from the devotional side. That it's so much greater. So if you want to cash it in, you can. You can take devotional credit and cash it in for pious credit. And you can get a lot for it. Right? Just taking prasad, Rupa Goswami says it's not proper to compare it, but it's equal to 10,000 ashwamedhi yagyas. Right? So it only takes 100 to become Indra. Right? It only takes 100 to become Indra. So that means 100 times it could become Indra from taking prasad. So if you really want to become materialist and cash it in, you can get, you know, some pretty high, what do you call it? The rates are very good. You know, the bank rates are very high. But why would one do that? It's so difficult to go back to Godhead. So many people are becoming Indra. Right? It means Bali Maharaj was in the position of a demon. He becomes Indra. Indra the dare. He always is doing something stupid. You know? Ends up as a pig, has to hide in a lotus flower, ends up with eyes all over his body. All kinds of stuff. Just because he's foolish. Right? Insults Krishna. He doesn't know Krishna is God. He just sees this little boy is telling Nanda Baba, you know, why you're doing this sacrifice? You just worship Govardhan Hill. You know, Govardhan is taken care of. Indra's, the demigods have to give anyway. But, so like that, then we have to have actual faith in the holy name. We can't think it's exaggeration. We just have to know. Whatever it is, our prarabdha karma is there. It means the result of our previous activities. Krishna will get rid of the desires, those that are sprouted, and those that are about to fructify. He'll remove all that. But he will leave the result, prarabdha. Means that what you're actually going to get now, he'll leave that. And he'll adjust it however much he wants. It may be very small, it may be not so small. Whatever he feels is best for us. But he'll get rid of the other three. While the process of atonement will get rid of the one, what you're supposed to get now, but it doesn't get rid of the other three. Therefore, it's just a matter of time. Right? It's just a matter of time. And then again, we'll be engaged in nonsense. So we have to have the faith actually in the devotional process and know that whatever we desire, it will come. But it comes through proper following. Like we see, preaching was very nice before. Devotees were very, very dedicated. The respect for devotees was very high. The movement became very opulent. Nowadays, you see, respect for devotees is not very high at all. I would say that in general, a new bhakta was respected more than an average senior devotee is now today. I've heard other devotees say how the respect that we had for the sannyasis when Prabhupada was here was greater than is shown afforded to the gurus now today. It's no joke. It's easily more. Doesn't mean in the way of showing flowers in this, but the respect, the surrender. When the sannyasi came, the whole temple stopped. And everybody was involved, hearing classes, doing this and that. And it was all, it was very nice association. Now someone can come in, go out, no one even knows you're there. The temple president had more respect than what we give the sannyasis. It means the Mahatma always, if the sannyasi was going to him, I always went to the temple president. Whatever he said went, you know. He said something, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, that's just the way it was. How he organizes, that's the way it was. Greatly respected. You offered your obeisances every day to the temple president. Then, how we respected the Brahmins then, the second initiated devotees, is greater than we give respect to the temple president now, today. Just the second initiated, boy, they were something special. And the new devotees, the first or uninitiated devotees, every day you offered your obeisances to them in the morning. Get up in the morning, take your bath, and then before Mangal Arati, you know, you offer obeisance to everyone in the temple. So whoever came into the temple room, or wherever you were chanting, when someone else came, you'd offer your obeisances. And so you'd do that many, many times. So like that, it was, so this was there. And we see the movement was very opulent. Like that. And now it's not there. And we see Krishna removes opulence. Devotees aren't there. Things are there. Just heard the last earthquake. Remember all those onyx pillars? I mean, onyx arches and pillars that were there in the Los Angeles temple? It was very opulent. Like that. Those are all gone now. Because in the earthquake, they all fell over and broke, so they didn't want to put them back up because they might fall on somebody. So they put wood now. It looks nice, but that opulence of that, Krishna's taken away. So the thing is, we have to see that there's direct connection. It means it goes both ways. Leaders have to be good, the followers also have to be good. That is there. Both have to be good. Like that. So we have to be very, very careful to see how the culture is being followed. The culture is being followed. Then we get a good result. Very nice result. So we should have faith that the glories of the holy name are true and the process of devotional service is as glorious and as powerful as it says. Rather than just go by what I see and my conclusions, I say it's like this. I see. This devotee has, I see that they got angry or they have a little material desire. So therefore they can't be pure. But that is my observation and that is my conclusion. And it doesn't necessarily have to have anything to do with reality of what the scriptures say and what the actual reality is of how others see it. Because the point is pure means the conscious effort is pure. The unconscious habit, that is what's being purified. And the holy name is purifying that. So as somebody advances, then we see that the gross desires start going, subtle desires may remain. And then with time, then those start to go. But it's not until we see that, how do you say it? So we have to be very careful. That, 6. It is offensive to consider the holy name of the Lord imaginary. So that is very obvious. So we understand is that the name itself is Krishna, and the glories of the holy name is yes.
You mentioned about the casing the transcendental activities of the past.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's possible, because if we do the transcendental activities in consciousness, then...
No, if you do it in consciousness that you want the result, then you get devotional benefit, but then you'll also get material result. But Krishna, see, the point is the problem is when you worship Krishna, Krishna gives the results whenever he likes. And Krishna, because he's from Mathura district, they're not always very how you say, their word is not always seen as, you know, good. They say one thing, they do another. That's just the people who are mature like that. So Krishna, you do some service for some material benefit, Krishna will give it whenever he likes, if he likes. Right? Therefore, the very materialistic people turn to the demigods, because the demigods will give quick results and exactly what you ask for. Right? But Krishna, he may give it or not, because he'll only give it if it's good for your devotional development. So he'll give when he likes, how he likes, and if he likes. But that will be there. Someone is more materialistic, then when he gets things, then he has more faith in the Lord. You find many devotees, how could this have happened? If, you know, Krishna is in control, how could this have happened? But that's just the way Krishna works. Because then that's the test. That is very clever. We have to understand is that we're asking for something. We're going for, like, we go to the deity and says, I surrender myself. I am yours, Krishna. So now I shouldn't be checked. Just like someone comes to you and says, you know, yes, you know, like this, I can do this, I can do that, I can do so many things. Now, you would practically go and find out if that's true. You know, does this person have all the qualifications and facilities and influence that he says he has? Then you will decide, okay, now we'll make a contract. Now we'll make a close relationship. You want to confirm it. So you've said all that, so Krishna, okay, let's see. You know, then he'll, you know, some little thing, and then it's like, oh, how can this happen? Little thing, right? Like, how much faith is there? We can get one person to fall down. One person. One only. And we can wipe out thousands of devotees. We can give up devotional service, turn from being nishkam kam, yoga bhaktas, to sakam. One person falls. So, Maya, it makes life easy for Maya. She just has to go, okay, where can we get the best? We just go for one person here, and we can wipe out half the movement. All faith in authority, faith in GBC, faith in sannyasis, like that. We can take the whole Varnashram system, turn it upside down. We can do all that when one person goes away. So now, is that a test or not? And who won? Maya. Who lost? All those devotees will say, Krishna, I surrender, and everything is yours. So we have to understand what is actually going on. The Prabhupada says if one person becomes a pure devotee, goes back to Godhead, all of the endeavor, the whole movement, all the money, everything, it's all worth it. Because he understands, and the Acharyas understand, one person going back to Godhead is so glorious that it's worth all the endeavor. But if we don't have that kind of faith, to us, devotees are a dime a dozen. But why are they a dime a dozen? Because of the power of Prabhupada. If we actually understood how rare devotees are, then we would just be talking about Prabhupada and the position he is. Prabhupada, we're not affording him a group high position. We're saying, well, he's the top, he's the big guru, and everybody else is going to be below that. But if we understood devotees, we would be putting devotees on a high position. And because Prabhupada has the power to make so many, we would putting him way above that. We're very miserly even in our respect that we offer to Prabhupada. Because we're saying that Prabhupada, it's just a very normal thing that he wrote, you know, in 11 years he wrote, you know, 60 volumes of books and, you know, established 108 temples and made thousands of devotees. It's, you know, I mean, it was just, a, you know, it was just normal. But I mean, how wonderful that is, how special that is. Where do we see that? Where do we see that kind of power? Right? In this age. You only have, basically, means in recent age that we know of, you only have three other examples of this. that they go from nothing to a huge established movement with thousands of devotees. There's only three other examples. Right? Madhva, Ramanuja, and Shankara. Right? And the Lord Himself comes as Buddha. And in a very short time, they establish all this. Right? Shankara was gone at 35. They didn't stay long. They didn't have to. So that amount of potency that's there in these people. So we're affording how much our conditioned hearts can give. So actually, what is the real position? That's another thing. So we have to be. It means the realism of what's going on. Then gradually, as we serve, then that will be understood. It step by step comes. But it's coming from the process. So what are the principles and the foundation that Prabhupada has given us? That has to remain in place. And then from that we can develop it and refine it. But if we come into a problem, then we have to look at it. Is it devotion process or is it how we applied it? Right? Just like if we a knife is there and we're cutting our subjects and then we cut the finger. Now whose fault is it? The knife's or us? Right? And so we can decide, well, these knives are too dangerous and actually they're not meant for this age, and you know, we're not, well, when Prabhupada was here the knives could be used, but now that he's gone, it's, you know, the whole different. So now we're going to, you know, cut up our cauliflower subject with a hammer. You know, less problem and all that. No one gets cut on a hammer. Guaranteed. Easily. No one gets cut up. You know? And then, of course, you know, the knife is made out of metal, the hammer is made out of metal, and the knife has a wooden handle, and the hammer has a wooden handle, and so it's just more great. But we, you know, anyone who knows a little bit about cutting subjects will know the hammer will not do so good on preparing a cauliflower for making it into subject. Like that. So we have to actually know what we're dealing with. Then we understand what went wrong. It means the uneducated, uninformed opinion then will think the process itself does something wrong. We surrendered to authority and we feel we got the raw end of the deal. So that was wrong. No. Surrender to authority is a principle, has no problem. We just have to make sure the authorities were of proper stature. And we have to see that I actually did surrender. You know, we may think we're surrendering, but did we? The leader may think, I led very nicely, I did everything for the devotees in the temple, still they're not satisfied. But did he actually lead properly? All that has to be checked. Because what is the check? You look. Bhagavatam gives everything. Generally, we look at Bhagavatam simply as a philosophical treatise, not as how you apply the philosophy in your life. Same with Chaitanya Charitamrita. I've spoken many things on these, how to just behave in the different things. And devotees go, where do you get that from? It's right from Prabhupada's books. You know, it's right out of the Bhagavatam. And so, you know, what do you mean it's out of the Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam tells you how do you establish, how do you find a leaf? Right? It's very clearly given when Uttanapada then decides to establish Dhruva Maharaj in the throne. Right? First he checks Dhruva Maharaj's qualification. He sees that it's proper. Then after checking that, and he's satisfied, then he goes to the elders. You know, because they're the ones that are going to have to live with him. As far as management. It means others who are managers that will have to deal with him. He asks them, what is their opinion? And they say, it's good. Then, once he's satisfied, and others who have knowledge of what management is are satisfied, then he checks with the people. He doesn't check with the people first. No good manager will do that first. You have to check with those who know management, because the people don't know what's good. But if they are satisfied that it will go, then it's there. Right? Democracy goes backwards. You start with the people. And because the people said, even other people, managers, they may say, this guy's not, it's not the thing. So, like that. So it's a very practical way. You need a new temple president, you know. Then you find someone who's qualified, you check with the other leaders in the temple, or, you know, the other persons that they have to deal with, the other senior devotees, they're satisfied, then you check what the devotees in the temple will think. If they don't know them, you know, fine, if they know them or something like that. Very practical. So is that going? Is that being used as standard? But that's the standard, right out of the Bhagavatam. And we can't say, well, that's only good for 5,000 years ago. There's nothing in the Bhagavatam that's for 5,000 years ago. Okay, we don't wear crowns now. But is that devotional service? Is that the principle of devotional service? Is that the principle of prescribed duty? King means a crown. Is that what it means? Is that the definition? What is a king? Crown. What is a Brahmin? Brahmin is red. What is a Vaishya? A big wallet of money. What is a Shudra? You know, a guy that runs a jackhammer. Is that the actual Vedic understanding? No, king is one who can protect those under him. And he's a good administrator. Like that. That is what you look for. And it becomes very, very nice. But if it's just, oh, he's the senior person in the temple, he should be. So since when has age been the reason for good management? Right? So many times you have a very qualified devotee, but he's a grand disciple of Prabhupada. But he won't put in the position of president because there's a Prabhupada's disciple who's president. That Prabhupada's disciple is not a manager, but simply because he's Prabhupada's disciple, therefore he's going to the president. And what happens? He doesn't manage nicely. The devotees aren't satisfied. Devotee, then he's not satisfied because the devotees don't deal nicely with him. And both go away bitter. And whose fault is it? It's all his sons. Right? So the GBCs, it's this one, it's that one. It's anybody else's in the universe but ourselves. Right? So the point is, we don't follow examples and the directions that are given in the scriptures. And have faith in the devotional process that it is spiritually and materially perfect, then we're always going to have problems. We're always going to have problems. So we have to be able to have that faith, otherwise it's not going to work. Now all this is, now one may be thinking, well, what does this got to do with deity worship? But the point is that if these things aren't understood, the deity worship, that factually does not go so well. It will not be long-lived, our deity worship, and it won't be so satisfying to Krishna. Because then we're seeing him and just kind of sentimentally dealing. But if we actually have knowledge and we understand Krishna means him, his devotees, his name, form, all his pastimes, all these things. So this mission is part of his pastimes. The devotees are his devotees. The name is his name. So without understanding this, then we actually don't understand the deity, who he is. Therefore, this aspect of swadhyaya, it's very important that is also understood and known. So all these aspects must be understood. Swadhyaya means to study. You study it, you know the theory behind it, you know, then you learn its application, then you apply it, right? And then from applying it, you'll get realization. Right? So when that realization comes, then that's when for the most pleasing to the Lord. But at least when we're applying it. Right? So unless we hear, and unless we contemplate, how are we going to get to the platform of application? Right? Therefore, it's called study, because that's where it starts. Right? It starts study. We study it, and then try to contemplate and understand its meanings, its applications, then we can apply it. Otherwise, unless we've thought about how we're going to apply it, right? We'll apply it. So, and we only think if we've heard. You know, unless we have some mystic city, we can just tune in like that. But so then seventh says the greatest offense at the lotus feet of the holy name is to think that since chanting the holy name can counteract all sinful reactions, one may therefore go on sinning and at the same time chant the holy name to neutralize the reactions. One thinks in this way cannot be purified by any program, sense of restraint and severe austerities, or by the various punishments of Yamaraj. So this is, it says here, the greatest, as they say, it's not the strongest. The greatest means it's like most abominable, most disgusting. The greatest offense is blasphemy of the devotee. It means greatest from the point of gives the strongest reaction. But one who does this, they haven't really taken up devotional service seriously. And they're not necessarily offending devotees here. Just that they're taking advantage of Krishna's compassion. So this is just disgusting. Right? Like that. So it's like the lowest of the low. It's an offense to consider the chanting of the holy name equal to the performance of ordinary religious ceremonies or fire sacrifices, the observance of austere vows, and the practice of renunciation, all of which are materialistic, auspicious activities. This aspect of also renunciation has to be understood. The holy name is greater than all of these because these are all material aspects. So the renunciation, many times gyan and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation are given very high esteem because that's the highest in the material world. But the spiritual considerations even beyond that. When one comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform, then the knowledge that one has that got one to that Brahma Bhuta platform, that then becomes secondary. It doesn't actually help advance anymore. Then it's only the association with pure devotees, that pure Adaloid devotees, that bring us to the platform of prema. And prema is not gotten by knowing that Krishna is God. Prema is gotten because one has attachment for Krishna. Right? Is it because Mother Yashoda knows Krishna is God, therefore she has so much love, and she specifically wants to love him as a mother? No, it means the knowledge that he is God starts to just disappear. Whether he's God or not, she couldn't care less. Right? Devaki and Vasudev know he's God, and the parental rasa is there, but we see that parental rasa is disturbed, because when he's manifesting as God, they're standing and offering prayers. Right? So the parental rasa is not happening. Then they say, please, you should take this form of the small child. It'll be, you know, then you'll be protected. Then the parental rasa is coming in. And then they act in that way. But Mother Yashoda, when Krishna opens his mouth at Brahmandagast, and she looks inside his mouth and sees the whole universal form and everything like that, she doesn't immediately, you know, start offering prayer and that. She just goes, you know, what's going on, you know. She's just bewildered. And then after enjoying the fun of, you know, seeing her bewildered, then Krishna just takes all that away, and she just immediately kind of just goes back into just a service. Like that. So it's not important at that stage. To get to that stage, very important. Krishna says, perform prescribed duties in knowledge. We know who we are. We know it's not this body. We know the material, what the material nature is. We know what the spiritual process is, and we know how to discriminate. So that knowledge will purify us from the material world and get us to the transcendental platform. But once we come to the transcendental platform, this knowledge doesn't continue. You know? So it does have its limits. Renunciation also. We take renunciation. That if someone has nothing, that's real renunciation. That's tyag. Right? Tyag means I had something, I gave it up. But sannyas means I don't perform activities that create material fruit. So here's where the bewildering element comes in. If I do, let's say I do business. Business definitely will create a fruit, right? At least if I'm a good businessman. So then one will say, how can you do business without creating fruit? So now the point comes is, who is fruit for, right? If some activity is done and it gives a fruit, and that fruit is for Krishna, is there any problem for Krishna? Does Krishna become distracted, or his godhood is challenged, or his purity, or his sovereignty is... No. But if the fruit is ours, now is our spiritual life, can that be sidetracked? Yes. So the problem is if we're thinking, I'm doing business and I think it's my fruit, then my devotional life can get sidetracked. Unless we're at least giving some of it to Krishna. But now if we are doing business and we know that this is Krishna's, means before we started, not that after I got the result, because that's tyag. I do the result, it's my business, my endeavor, my results, but because according to scriptures I should give to Krishna, I give to Krishna. Right? But that's tyag. Renunciation of what we think is ours. Sannyasa means is you understand that it's not mine to begin with. And it is my duty to perform I must perform my prescribed duties according to my conditioned nature. But the results of that are not mine. Right? Kanyeva kadaste. Right? Should perform, you have a right to perform your prescribed duties. Ma phaleshu kadachana. But the fruit is not belongs to us. Ma karma phalahetu bhuti. You should not think I am the cause of it. Yes, because I am such a clever businessman, I got all this profit. No, because Krishna sanctioned you got all that profit. There's plenty of clever businessmen out of there going bankrupt. There's plenty of people who aren't that clever who are getting plenty of money. And there are clever people getting lots of money. And there's foolish people who get no money. So it's all up to Krishna. It's all up to Krishna. So when we understand this, and the last point, not to karmani, that you should not do your duty. Like Arjuna was professing. I won't do my duties as Kshatriya, I'll just go to the forest. So therefore we must do it. So someone has a business nature, and especially if they're grihastha, then they must do business. But they understand that fruit and the result of that fruit coming has nothing to do, it's not theirs. It's Krishna's. That's sannyas. So this is one of the most hidden understandings of the scriptures, is to be able to factually understand that a businessman, you know, working hard at his business is actually a sannyasi. If he has that consciousness. Right? And if he doesn't have that consciousness, so this is Nishkama Karma Yoga. Means without desire, one is performing one's duties, prescribed duties. Then, if he's doing it, thinking it's his, that's sakam. But he's giving the results. Because he's giving the results to Krishna, it's sakam. And if he does it thinking he's a steward and doesn't give the results, then he's a materialist. So we have three different people doing business. One is a materialist. One is a yogi, but still has material desire, strongly mixed. And then one is very mildly mixed, hardly anything. That will be called, one will be pure devotee, One will be a devotee, and one is a non-devotee. And then, beyond this, then you have the pure, unalloyed devotee. So be able to, that is, then one can understand this point here, is that all the austere vows, all this and that, the holy name is not compared to any of those. Because we have to, once we take up the holy name, we're on a different level. Totally different level. Like, totally different. Very different. Then the last nine is, it's an offense to preach the glories of the holy name to those unwilling to hear, to atheists, or those who have no faith in chanting the holy name. So, by preaching to them, then they simply increase their bad feelings. Maybe they didn't know about Krishna, they didn't know about anything. And they're atheists. Then you tell them about Krishna. And the more you tell them about it, the more they have things to think about and feel bad about Krishna. So as soon as you see someone is not interested, then at that point, then that is just... One doesn't preach more. One can talk about other things, you know, or feeding people or something. Like that. So that's, that aspect is there. Those who are unwilling to hear because they don't want to hear, you tell them, they get upset. Those who are atheists, the more you tell them, the more they make trouble. And those who have no faith in chanting the holy name. So depending upon this, this can also refer to that that someone should not accept as disciples someone who is not qualified. Meaning your faith is not strong. It's also included in this category. But that's not mentioned generally, the general, but it's also understood that that someone accepting unqualified disciples is also the ninth offense. Yes.
It is said that the name of Krishna is three times stronger than the name of God. How can I understand this in accordance to the statement that you cannot undermine the potency of the holy name, and practically it's unlimited potency?
Okay. So, you could all hear? Mm-hmm. So, he was asking is that we see that the holy name, it says that, that three chantings of Rama is equal to one chanting of Krishna. So then, how would one understand that? Because then you're saying that, you know, the name of Rama is less than Krishna. And it's then the names of the Lord, they're all unlimited, like that. So how do you balance this? So this is a very important point. This is I would say that this particular point is very much holding back the development of probably a vast majority of devotees. This principle behind this, not the specific point, but the principle behind it. We discussed it before. Is that we see everything in time and space. And our heart, our brain, everything works in time and space. And we give a certain amount of space for something, and that's it. So, therefore, we cannot understand beyond that. So this is the difficulty that comes. Is that, like we take Guru, if he's absolute, then no one can tell him what to do. He is beyond everyone, completely independent. No institution especially, right? Institutions have to be mundane. So they can't tell them what to do, right? There's a vast majority of Gaudiya Vaishnavas who think like this. It's not the what's being presented in ISKCON, but outside, they think like this. He has to be above the institution. So then... Because they take time and space and place on an absolute principle, which doesn't really fit. Can we understand in our head unlimited? No. We can't. So this is why hearing has to be more important than how we observe things. Because just as the spiritual master is absolute, still, because absolute is personal, right? The supreme absolute is Krishna, who's a person. and everything coming from him is personal. Therefore, if you really want to understand everything that's going on, you have to understand it from the personal side. The tattva establishes things, so we know how they can relate to each other. But if you really want to enter into it, you have to understand the person. Right? You have to actually understand the person. Because the tattvas will come into that. They're applied. The application is always personal. But we'll take an aspect of tattva and apply it, and we will try to also apply it in a non-personal way. Like that. So therefore there's difficult. Just like you have the mother and you have the child. Now according to tattva, the mother is the authority, then the child is the dependent. Okay? Now, can we apply that as the mother coming in and saying, "All right, kid, you know, attention," you know, and like that. Will that work? Will you find a nice relationship between the mother and child? But some people will complain, but according to the tattva, this is right. We applied it, and it doesn't apply now. Therefore, all this stuff should be thrown out. It's for a previous age. Why? Because we applied it as in an impersonal way. Just so you know, who's the superior, who's the junior, the tattva is brought out. But now, how do you apply that? The mother, knowing that she is the authority, then she has all mercy, compassion, well-wishing for the child. And she's going to deal with the child very, very gently and nicely. Right? And is she going to, the kid has to come to her standards? No. She means with time she will, but immediately she will work and explain things on what level the kid can understand. So even though she's the big authority, she doesn't come along and speaking all big words. She uses small words. In small sentences, tones of voice, all these different things. That is the actual understanding. Yes. So now if we take this, temple president is the authority, others follow. And if we apply it like that, then what do we get? A lot of unsatisfied devotees. GBCs are on the top of the temple presidents, but if we don't apply it properly, then there's a problem. You know? You get the husband supposed to lead the wife. But if you just take that and apply it, you get the same craziness. Because they don't know how to apply it as people. So all the philosophy has to be applied in a personal way. Therefore, Bhagavatam is the topmost scripture. Because Bhagavatam takes every aspect of the philosophy and applies it in a personal way. Every aspect. Nothing is left out. So if we don't take the Bhagavatam as where we get all our at least the principles from, I mean, we want to know management. We have to take the principles of management from the Bhagavatam. Details we can take from anywhere. Details we can take from Kavi Pad and this Pad and that Pad. It doesn't matter. If we try to take the principles from Kavi, how are we going to interface with the Bhagavatam? And as followers of the Bhagavatam, we don't, but there's many problems. I have seen people who they themselves are teachers for the Kavi Institute. They are teachers. They teach people how to follow Kavi's book of management. Right? And even teach teachers how to become teachers of Kavi's process of management. And that same person has been a temple president. And has so dissatisfied all the members of his temple that he's felt obliged to leave and go to the practice the other side of the planet. So therefore, unless you take the principles from Bhagavatam, there's no detail in this world that will have any use in Krishna consciousness. So Yukta Vairagya means that we're taking the we're performing our prescribed duties for pleasing Krishna. And it means we're following the culture that Krishna gives us. And details we can take from anywhere. Right? Just like we can use a car in Krishna's service. But now how do we drive that car? according to how a devotee gentleman would drive the car? Because we could also follow the culture of, you know, a bunch of punk kids, or a race car driver, or a destruction derby driver. There's so many ways we can apply it. Is it a status symbol for us? When we drive into a place and we get out of our car and everyone around knows, oh, here's the big guy. So we can use it in so many ways. But what do? We use a car, but we use it to keep our own culture. So therefore, whatever we use, we keep the culture. We don't take the culture of the thing. Just like we want to use the computers, we use it in our own way. We use the email, we use it in our own way. Right? Just because on this computer you can say anything you want and send it out to 20 people and flick the switch, doesn't mean you can do it. Karmis can do it, but the Buddhists don't do that. Because we have a culture. And if it's not in that, then how is it going to be, how can we call it Yukta Vairagya? How has it been used in Krishna's service? Because Krishna has established prescribed duties. Right? A kshatriya before could use a sword or a club or bows and arrows. Now, today, they will need to use all modern warfare. But their principles of application, they're still going to have the same principles of protecting their people and doing all this. That doesn't change. So that's a very important thing, is that we understand is that the in absolute, there is various levels. So the spiritual master is absolute. He is submissive. Now, to get back to the point. He is submissive to his guru, because he's a person and his guru is a person. See, as tattva, we say the guru is absolute. But then, what about the thing of, then there's the parampara. Now we put that together, then you have his personal thing, that the guru is under his guru. And that goes back to Rupa Goswami. But Rupa Goswami is absolute. But does that mean that Rupa Goswami doesn't follow in this Rupa Damodar? Rupa Damodar is absolute. Does that mean he doesn't is not submissive and serve Lord Chaitanya? Right? And then when we get to the top, Krishna. So he's the top of the pile. He's the only one that you actually can say he's absolute. No one's above him, no one's equal to. Right? Everyone else, then you can't say that. And then, what is his mood? He's submissive to his devotee. So because the whole thing's personal, then it works very, very nicely. But if we simply take the tattvas and don't apply it from the personal way, it'll only create havoc. Right? And we can't say, well, we tried it. No. You've tried it when you've done it in the right way. And when you do it in the right way, you'll get the right result. So that's why the culture must be understood. So in the absolute, there's no contradiction. If Ram's name is absolute and unlimited, but then more than that, it's Krishna's name, which is absolute and unlimited. Because within absolute, there is variety. Madhva calls this taratamya. Is that within there's various levels of absolute. We're all absolute, but in absolute there's variety. So if we don't see that, that's the impersonal. It means there's only one absolute, and that's Brahman. It's all equal. And then we look at our philosophy, and then we look at the etiquette, and then in that same way we apply it into life, and then no one should satisfy, because people are people, and they want personal dealings. People left the material world because they felt it was too impersonal. Right? But then you see devotees are going back to the materialistic world and saying the karmas are great. They're real nice. Because they're superficially nice. Right? Before we were in the material world, we saw the karmas are superficial. We want some substance. We come to Krishna consciousness. Then devotees don't apply the devotional etiquettes and culture nicely. Then they deal they don't deal superficially nice. You know, they're real. They're straightforward, realistic. You know, they're, you know, no nonsense. So the impersonalism is blatantly seen also. So then devotees go back and they say, wow, you know, I got a job outside with some karmis, and they at least deal with you superficially nicely. But the point is, we're attracted to Krishna consciousness, and when you hear it, then it says, this is the answer. This is the actual proper ways of dealing. But then we have to apply it according to the way that it's given. How do the devotee, how does Prithu, how does Rishabhdev, how does, you know, all these persons act as kings? So that's how the leader acts. How are all the persons in there as husbands? How are they acting? How are the wives acting? How are the children acting? How are the teachers acting? So we may say, well, that's 5,000 years ago. But we better try to come to that platform, because whatever's going on today doesn't satisfy anybody. 5,000 years ago, they were satisfied. So therefore, at least we accept the principle to try to get as close as we can. And even if we get a little close, it'll be millions of times better than whatever's going on nowadays, you know, in the material world. So it's just a matter of, we have to be able to see spiritual variety. Spiritual variety is very important. Like that. So, yeah. Okay. Is that answer? Yeah. Like that. Then 10, if a person has heard the glory of the transcendental holy name of the Lord, but nevertheless continues in the materialistic concept of life, thinking, I am this body and everything belonging to this body is mine. And if he thus shows no respect or love for the chanting of the holy name, that is an offense. So therefore we should understand the spiritual concept about the body. We may not be realized in it, but we at least understand it and accept it, that this is the standard. And due to habit, we forget. And we may not have love for the holy name, but we have respect for the holy name. And then in this way, then we advance nicely. Then the 10th offense is avoided. Like that. But we have to be very, very careful that if we perform, if we see the 10th offense, we will naturally grow. We offend the devotees, we offend the spiritual master, the shastras, we don't have faith in the holy name. Even if we don't have so much faith in the holy name, he's a little more broad-minded, because it's just himself. But anything else connected with him, you know, especially those three, the guru, the sadhus, and the shastra, you offend those, then the material concept of life grows. So this is the last. If the other nine are avoided, this one disappears. But if those are there, then this one will remain. Like that. So we should always try to understand this. Any other questions on this? Yeah. So, in other words, with these proper understandings of the ritual and of the different aspects of chanting, this is how someone who wants to worship the deity in a very pleasing way should understand, you know, the holy name in that. So then, tomorrow we'll continue with Tulsi Devi, worship of Tulsi Devi, Tulsi Seva. What time is it?
12:40,
okay. So beyond time, easily. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.